Access more.
Welcome to Becoming Us, our cinematic podcast, where we'll be diving into our story, romance, life, and music.
We've spent the last 10 years unraveling what love truly looks like in sickness and in health, in the good times and the uncertain.
We'll be processing our triumphs, troubles, and even our secrets with the help of friend and mentor, Kerry Hosenbog. Together, we invite you into this spiritual truths in our journey.
And our hope is that she'll bring wonderful insight into yours as well. So wherever you are,
you're invited to come along for the next few minutes as we laugh,
cry, and share our story.
This is Becoming Us, our cinematic podcast. First things first, let's set the record. We want to dive in over this next kind of season in each episode drop into different points of our relationship, starting with the kind of peculiar, humorous, strange moment that we met. Mm. We're on this journey. We're not the experts in the room here. We will be consulting an expert.
We don't have children. We've only been married for 7 years. There's a lot that we don't know, hence us starting from the place of telling our story, because that's the one thing we do know. We've made some not so great choices at times, and then we've made some really great choices. And so I think in sharing that, you can take what you will from our experiences, but we're not here to tell you what to take from that. And this is a journey for all of us. So thank you for joining us.
So let's dive in, though. I am an Australian with a slightly confused accent.
I am a Los Angeles Latina with a very
West Coast accent. West Coast accident. Who?
Accident.
Says, accent.
How dare you?
An accident that says things.
I pronounce my G's.
Yeah. I'm going to take us back to a few days before we met.
Mm-hmm.
I was 26, just turned. I was only high school educated, and never went to college. The only thing I know and knew in life was really live presentation, performance, and music. And it was a dark time because I'd worked on this independent band with my brother Luke for about 5 years, and it just seemed like we were spinning our wheels. And I had not had any luck either in relationships. I had a long-term dating relationship that ended with us separating, and it had been a couple of years of kind of loneliness through my mid-20s, culminating in the Sunday preceding the day we met, in fact, I was on the ride-on mower praying. Mm-hmm. And the prayer I remember, for whatever reason, I remember it very vividly, and it went something along these lines. God, I'm very lonely, and it would be lovely if you would send me a friend. And it would be lovely if she was a woman.
Mm-hmm.
It would be lovely if she was beautiful, and it would be lovely if I could marry her. What about you, Dawn? Where were you?
Oh, I was 17 and I had just finished high school. I felt like being a lawyer was kind of the career path that was ahead of me. And I had already gone to freshman orientation. The next 4 years of my life and potentially 8 years of my life were set. And through meeting a wonderful family out in LA, through auditioning for American Idol, I ended up in this really precarious situation where I was offered a record deal and a management deal, and basically given this opportunity to create an album. And I knew that this was my childhood being severed. This was the end.
Yeah.
17, you're leaving home. You're not going to come back. And who knows what your future is going to be now. And I didn't always have a great relationship with my mom as a teenager. In fact, it was really toxic, but that's another podcast for another time. She's an amazing woman. It was all on me, 100%. But I remember laying on her lap and just sobbing because I was mourning that childhood being over. I didn't have 4 years to actually transition out of teenagehood into adulthood. It was just happening. And so I had
a 4-hour flight.
Yeah. So I had this like really sad longing in my heart. I was leaving everyone that knew me, everything that I was familiar with, and going into this world where I knew no one, had no friends, had no community. Mm-hmm. And that's the state that my heart was in. I think we were both kind of in a place of longing, but for very different reasons.
You were on an aircraft. I was on a lawnmower.
Mm.
But interject, Luke and Courtney's wedding.
I was a total wedding crasher.
You were a wedding crasher. I'm going to play an audio voice memo.
Okay.
That I recorded the day after Luke and Courtney's wedding. And for those of you who are listening or watching that don't know, Luke is my brother. I'm in a band.
Fucking and country.
Yep.
I love saying
that's
it like
exactly
that.
That's exactly the way we say it.
Yeah.
An explanation as to these voice memos. I do kind of, particularly during that time, daily
audio journals.
Audio journals where their prayers, they're kind of recapping the day. Mm. And this was recapping Luke and Courtney's wedding. It's very brief.
Spent time socializing, said hello to a bunch of people, namely Wendy Green and this chick named Maria, who is beautiful.
My name's not Maria.
She's really young.
Maria, everyone. If that's not a tragic Hispanic cliche.
That's so weird hearing your voice. Oh my gosh, how weird.
Timestamp. Yeah,
was I the first Mexican that you'd ever met? Like, Maria?
Look, okay, we'll get into the night
okay,
itself.
Okay, sorry, that was a side note. But, that was so sweet. Thank you for finding that. I'm emotional.
There might be a little redness.
That was really sweet.
She's really young. So I took the liberty this morning of going back through some voice memos so and I've got another one to play a little bit later, but that was the first one that came to mind.
It's now so let magical.
Me let me set the backdrop to the wedding real quick, okay? I turn around at the reception and I see an very beautiful Hispanic girl, evidently named Maria.
Oh,
and
God.
I was flabbergasted.
Oh my gosh, how sad and sweet. Gosh, well, leading up to that moment, I was in a very different place.
Headspace?
Like, like it's kind of sad, being it when you think about it.
No, I had no idea. I was knocked off my feet.
So like whimsical and magical and romantic, and I was just waiting for normal body parts to arrive, and like I was not in any place, shape, or form ready for a real relationship. Like I was still getting over the fact that homeboy that I took to homecoming left me and danced with some other girls and told them all that he was my cousin. Like, it's like, that's,
which is a tragic
that's
story,
where my dating life had been.
But did you tell them about, like, you knew
I
that
knew,
I was going to be
I
there.
I knew that you were going to be there because our mutual friend had just, oh my gosh, like, she is a great saleswoman. In fact, that's her career and she does a great job, but she was pitching you so hard, showing me pictures, playing me demos, talking about your bone structure, talking about
my
how great
bone
your
structure.
Voice is. Yes, you have a beautiful jawline and high cheekbones, but like it just was over the top. It was too much. And unfortunately, the small, the minority of actors and models that I had been introduced to were so into themselves. And so I developed a little bit of a stereotype in my head that, like, if a guy is really good looking, he's probably going to have a big head. So when I went into the wedding, it was my MO, it was my focus to find you and to bring you back down to earth. I was convinced that I was in no way going to be attracted to you, that you were just going to be like every other guy. I mean, like, you're not unattractive to look at, but you don't necessarily see someone's soul when you're as calloused as I was. You just see.
You judged me.
I judged you 100%.
All that to say, it made for a very polarizing moment when we met.
Yeah. But I'm really sorry for how rude I was when we first met.
I'm not.
Okay, well.
Because let me just go through the moments
of that
night.
This is not a good look for me.
Let's go through the moments of that night.
Not a good look for me.
So we talk briefly. We talk briefly when we meet, and I'm like, I've got to see this girl again. Who is she? I need to know more, because I didn't know anything about you.
All you knew is that my name was Maria.
Yeah, her name. I definitely knew her name was Maria. That we had a friend there who...
To the Latin community, I have since educated this man to new levels of awareness.
She has. So the next interaction I had with you that night was there was an NFL football player at the wedding who played with the Colts, who had become a friend. He's a musician.
Picture Ben. Shrek 2 when Shrek turns into the handsome version of himself.
Yes.
That's what this guy looks
which
like.
Which is exactly the way I interjected myself into the conversation. Mm-hmm. So I remember putting my hand on his very muscular shoulder. And my interjection point as an Australian homeschooler was to say, isn't this man just a human specimen? I mean, look at him. He's like a Disney prince. Mm. And all of the air got sucked out of the room and everyone, including myself, got very awkward.
It was essentially a 5-minute monologue on
about his
the beauty,
beauty
of this man.
Man. Yeah. The specimen was the word I used.
Yeah, it was a little uncomfortable.
It got very uncomfortable and then I left. The next time round, as I recall, to communicate with you was we had plans of barn dancing that night. Barn dancing is an Australian form of sort of line dancing, if you will. Just think of an Aussie version of line dancing. And Rebecca, my older sister, was like, we have to do barn dancing. And so I convinced Maria to stay.
Oh, God. So sad.
Later in the wedding to do this barn dancing to dance with me.
It was really, really beautiful.
Thank
definitely
you.
Not the kind of dancing I was used to and exposed to in a public school in the heart of LA. So that was really nice.
And the final moment of confidence and bravado that night happened right as the bride and groom, being my brother and sister-in-law, were about to leave. And they had, instead of sparklers or rice or whatever else, they had determined they would do bubbles.
I don't know if it was flirting as much as it was just like being 17 and awkward, but I blew some bubbles in your face when you weren't looking.
And I was
And
like,
he ran with it.
And I dipped into the jar and I blew bubbles back at Maria. But instead of it being bubbles, I think I was so zealous that I blew too hard. So in effect, I just ended up spitting soap water all over her face.
I just
which
pretended
was another,
it wasn't happening.
Yeah, you never
so
looked
you
at me, which was a
look,
fail.
Feel too embarrassed. Yeah.
And that is the night we met.
Mm.
Now, before we get to calling Kerry, I have one more voice memo to play for you that you've never heard.
Is this going to make me cry or laugh?
Awkwardly laugh.
Okay.
Be ready, darling.
Mm-hmm.
Hung with Mariah a couple hours, sort of messed around with writing a little bit, but faking my way through it like a fraud. A little bit. Trying to act like I play stuff I don't really play. It's older than 8 years. Really sweet girl. Can't quite put my finger on it. She just might be young. Maybe she's not, but she's hard to read. has his strength there. It's very impressive.
I don't know whether to laugh or to cry. It's so embarrassing. But it had to be done. The world had to know of the musical fraud just to try and impress you.
How are we supposed to continue with this conversation after hearing that? Ironically, that's the one that's making me most emotional. You did not know the power and the talent and the incredible potential that you possessed. And I feel like when I think about what we offered one another in that time, mm-hmm. Can't look at you. When I think about what we offered each other in that time, I feel like I was able to come alongside you as someone who didn't judge your position in life. My mom provided for them while my dad was in law school. There was nothing unconventional about where your starting point is. What mattered is that my mom saw that my dad was a hardworking man who kept his word. Mm-hmm. And like, it didn't matter to me that you didn't necessarily have a job, that you had $52 in your bank account, that you had this rundown car, that you were living with your parents. None of that mattered because I wasn't in a much different of a situation. I was living with friends on couches in random places out of a suitcase. And maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I was able to offer you in that time just a sense of self and like an encouraging voice to just be like, you're amazing. You have so much to offer the world. And I want to cheer you on. And I want to partner with you in every step of the way. And it's crazy that we've kind of done that.
You know, this was only a couple of days after we'd met, but this was my gateway to get to know you. Basically, I said, well, let's write a song together that week. Mm-hmm. And that first night, I remember leaving going, she won't like call back or want to kind of continue it because it was such a schmozzle and such a show of like the fact that I don't really proficiently play an instrument very well.
You said in that voice memo, you know, she's hard to read. I don't know how she's feeling, whatever. Part of that was because of my upbringing. I think it's very easy to see my very confident decision to save my first kiss for my wedding day as—
which we'll get to later as well.
As a spiritual expression, but really, it wasn't. It truly wasn't. I mean, I think God used it, but like— everyone that I went to high school with was very sexually active. From the time I was in sixth grade, that's when that stuff started happening. And it's not that I didn't like you or I was trying to play games or I didn't want to show what I was really feeling or thinking. It's just I was on the defense because I was afraid of what vulnerability could lead to.
Ironically served you very well. I've said this to you many times, but the way that you believed in me every step of the way, the domino effects in my life from Fikian country and building confidence to the genre of music we went into, to, as you well know, really fell by you that night making a decision to set aside maybe some of those concerns or fears or questions and actually believe. Because what ended up happening beyond that was I rightfully so pulled in an incredible musician after that. I called him my wingman, Filipino Frederick Williams, who wrote a song called The Proof of Your Love with us as a band. I pulled him in and he very unknowingly became sort of the violinist or the third guy in the room, proverbially, while we, over the next 2 or 3 days, wrote a love song. A duet that ended up being on your second record, which we should play.
Oh, we should.
Or just a portion of it.
Sure.
Love. Wait for me, wait for me, wait for me, love.
Wait for me, love.
look, we're going to shift gears to kind of the closing portion of this podcast, which is going to kind of be a running theme. And darling, I'd love for you to set up our very, very special guest for this last portion.
Carrie is one of the few people I know who had a history of working on Capitol Hill and had done work in the human trafficking and orphan care worlds. But since then, she's become a dear friend to us. She's a mother of four, wife to Scott, a great mentor to you.
And they are great partners with each other as well, which has always been beautiful to watch.
They're passionate about marriage, which, like, who in this world is passionate about marriage?
We're passionate about marriage.
We are. So we're kindred spirits in that way. She's a Christian contemplative. She's the founder of, get this, Becoming. I just felt like it would be really special for her to just be that third perspective that we so often need in a dynamic of two.
And the sort of humorous part of all of this is that Carrie has been listening in on this conversation. And so as listeners and viewers, would you welcome the lovely Carrie Hosenbarg?
Oh, it's so nice to be with you guys. This is the joy.
It is the joy. How did she do on your setup, Carrie? Did she do...
She was very gracious and kind, as usual. I actually love that you brought to the listeners, to the friends and the audience that's out there at this time that we're looking at love, the bumbling, fumbling, you know, self-protective, fearful, insecure parts of your relationship.
It is interesting, too, that well, thank you for that, dear. And I feel like you bring up an interesting point that in culture, and maybe I dare say in American Christian culture, we can tend to hide away a little bit, particularly our faults and flaws. And this is sort of lighthearted stuff at this point, right? We're not into the nitty-gritty of marriage. It does feel, I don't know, important. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, absolutely. Especially in the two things that, at least for me, when I look at the two of you, I see creativity, I see loving relationship. And you're known for that, right? You have a beautiful love story and you are both, you know, prolific creators. But in creating for society and then also in, you know, being in loving relationship, you can't really collaborate or co-labor unless you both feel safe. And if you don't, you only feel safe when you're vulnerable with one another.
Carrie, part of the reason why it's taken 7 years for me personally to feel comfortable talking about our story and how we met is I think I've felt there are still so many people listening right now, people in my life, like my super hot single sister.
Who, by the way, single men, DM me.
Joel's going to filter. DM Joel. First. So is there something from our story that you feel like would just be helpful or maybe even encouraging to someone who's listening right now and like, cute story, but not mine, not for me, not relatable. Yeah. What would you say?
Wow. Well, first of all, yes, Bianca's amazing. And I also have some beautiful, amazing single women in my life. And around this time of year, it's really hard because we start thinking about love and wondering who loves us and are we fully loved? And we're only fully loved if we're fully known. And I think that a couple things. One, in general, love, like creativity, is about giving and to other people and to society. But in terms of what we need, we can fully know love by fully knowing God. Like when we know Him, we can receive that thing that we need. And out of that receiving, we give. And then I think that when there's two people that are filled up and are receiving, then it's just about relationship and being the overflow of love to other people. And so often we get it backwards. We look to other people to give us love and we start giving and taking out of a poverty rather than an abundance from the source of love. Yeah.
I understand, you know, the idea of receiving love from a source outside of yourself, but sometimes you just need someone to hug you. Sometimes you just need to like cuddle with someone, snuggle under some blankets and watch a movie together. Like, what do you do with that longing that is very physical, that is very tangible, and that is so real for so many people?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's the essence of living in this life. It's longing for those things to be imaged towards us, right? To be held and to be cared for and to see and touch. But I think what's really important is that we don't demand of God to do it in a certain way through a certain person at a certain time. Like you just shared your love stories. It was Joel sitting on, was it a lawnmower? And basically like saying like, I love you, God, right? I'm in you, I'm going to you, but I would really like a person so I'm not lonely, right? And it's you laying on your mom's lap and saying, I'm about to leave this belonging, but I'm asking you to give me another sense of belonging in people. And so it's God then chooses to image it in a way that's healthy. And I think this is actually how we all came together and started talking about how you were each failing one another. And it came down to the fact that you were demanding that the other person, sort of quietly demanding, be God, right? Or to be your source, or to, you know, and so then it became like back to Mr. Try Hard and Miss Isolation. Yeah. And so then you remembered, oh, wait, I have to go to the Lord and let him image it. Sometimes it's through your spouse. Sometimes it's through a friend. Sometimes it's in silence. And so I think it's about not demanding of God or of people, but inviting God to answer that need in the way he thinks is best.
It feels as though longing of a broken relationship, longing of no relationship, longing of a lost loved one. I mean, it's this recurrent theme of life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I was never so lonely as I was after I was married. And I married an amazing person, but it was because suddenly I had forgotten what I had found in being alone. In being alone, I kept going to God and he would image it through this friend or that friend. And and here I was with a spouse and I started putting too much on him and demanding. And so I think what you said, Joel, of like, you know, being in that longing and not deciding the answer to that.
You have really invited me into what it means to sit with a scripture and allow for it to be revealed to you and take on new meaning and not be just be words and not just be something that you quote.
Yeah,
and
Hallmark
that, it's like, what is the energy and what is the spiritual power behind these words? I just wondered if there was a specific scripture that you feel like we could carry into this podcast,
that Carrie could
marriage.
Help us carry into the podcast. Right. And manage it, you know?
So I actually woke up this morning with a scripture that I was thinking about, and it's kind of all the things that we talked about, ironically, that there's in all the toil and all the work, right? The creative work, that's what work is. In all the creativity and the laboring under the sun, it's vanity because it comes out of competitive jealousy. So this is what Solomon said. Yeah. But then he goes right into, but two are better than one, for they have a good return for their work or for their labor. If one falls down, the other can pick him up. And I think that's sort of all the things that we just talked about. Like, what does it look like not to love out of, you know, an impoverished spirit, not to create out of jealousy, but to really know one another and hear one another and love one another, because you know you're known and you're loved and you're heard, and then you can co-labor. And when you bumble and fumble, the other person can pick you up, right?
Wow. Reminds me of a song that my wife wrote recently that no one's heard yet called Known, Seen, Loved. Oh, you've heard it, Carrie.
Yes, and I love that.
But with that, we should conclude our very first podcast. Thank you. Dear Carrie.
Love you guys.
See you soon.
Bye.
Let me say a prayer. God, thank you for the opportunity to put hope on the airwaves. This is an attempt in many ways for us just to release it back to you in hopes that it can be edifying and encouraging to other people.
Thank you, Joel.
Whatever type of day it is, if it's in the longing or the struggle or the loss or the fulfillment, I think the beauty that we can come back to is that there is always hope in love and relationship. There is always a new beginning with every end. And so we hope you, in our little fumbly bumbly start to our romance, you've taken some truths and hopefully some hope through the words, particularly that Kerry has spoken. So we will see you again. I'll say this: there's a lot more voice memos to come that Mariah's never heard.
Oh gosh!
And there's a deepening and a drama and a beauty to these next few stages of our relationship that we will kind of unpack and walk you through over the next few weeks. So we hope you can join us. Ping that bell or whatever it is to subscribe.
Also, if this particular episode impacted you or you feel like it would encourage someone else, share it.
And we look forward to connecting with you next week for the second episode as we dive deeper into our pre-dating debacle.
Yay! Hey.
Next week on Becoming Us.
17 days into meeting, you started saying voice memos to me, addressing me as your wife. Joel, that's a little crazy.
Hey, look, they were gonna be deleted if this didn't happen.
I'm just going to presume in a nutshell that the only way we're listening to these is if we are married or to be married. So, again, we're like 17 days into this, 18 days into this since we met. And you're also more even keel, which is pretty massive because I need that, selfishly speaking.